This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
AKA Feathers. Not Big Megan, not Other Megan, not Nutrition Megan. Feathers. It's real easy, people. You got Meg and Feathers. And that way, when you come to a group run, you just be like, what's up, Feathers? And Meg won't swing her head around. But right. Meg will.
We also... You know, like in a race, if somebody's like, yo, Feathers, I'm like, oh, that's definitely for me. Versus there's a lot of Megans out there, so, you know, I dig it.
No, see, that's when I feel like it's okay for them to yell Meg or Megan, because then, like, if they're cheering for you, I'll be like, oh, that was for me, and then I'll feel great, so I think that's
Oh, yeah, when
totally
we're together.
Fine.
Yeah, when we're together, it's just Megan.
Yeah.
Meg, the Megs.
Plural.
Yeah. All right, so you are listening to Fuel for the Soul, the podcast where we talk all things hydration and nutrition and how it affects performance. And we're going to dive into a bunch of listener questions today. But first, we have to talk about this, quote, new product from Morton. Did I say it right?
Yeah. Could they just call it the bigger bag?
The Mega Morton. Somebody was calling it the Mega Morton instead of
It's almost, or the Venti. They could go Starbucks route. And, you know, give it a funky name. Because, I mean, it's just a bigger cup, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And they hyped it up like this new product was coming. And, I mean, we all got kind of excited. And then we were like, oh, it's just a little more of what we already got.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're not releasing the flavored the flavored drinks mix. But
I don't know what I want from them, but I want them to give me something I didn't know I needed. And I haven't seen
it. Oh, I think
yet.
That's coming, though. The flavored thing is coming.
Oh, okay. The flavor? They're actually going to flavor something? Why do I feel like they're actually not going to do that? It sounds like April Fool's joke.
The drink mix. So your drink mix will get get a flavor.
Interesting.
Yeah, but no, and I saw a dude who was like a regular guy, and he was stirring up his Morton bicarb before he went for like a training run, and I'm like, all right, Kipchoge.
All right, Kip. Yeah, we've got a question about that today, so we can talk about it. Yeah, I don't know. So I had a lot of questions, like, should I try it? Should I buy it? Should I try it? Should I buy it? So I compared it to make sure I wasn't missing something, but it is. It's just literally more of what is already in the 100 gel. There's not any more sodium. In fact, the first nutrition thing that they put out had less sodium. And now they've corrected it on their website, or changed it on their website, and there's like a little bit more sodium. So I don't think anyone really knows how much sodium's in any of their stuff. And yeah, it's just a bigger gel. So it's 40 grams of carbs instead of 25 grams of carbs.
Is that, what is that? Is that noise the tree cutting
people?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. It's
so
just
right
a little
now,
background noise.
Just so you'll know, the audience can be in on this. Feathers is having her tree and her yard worked on, and she didn't want to pay professionals, so she's basically got some locals up in her tree chopping some stuff down, probably some 16-year-olds.
No, like it's a bunch of brothers. Some of you saw the picture, like one massive tree took out three other trees in our backyard, so we've had four trees down for like 2 weeks now, waiting for somebody to come clean this up, and of course they decided to come clean it up when we're... Fuel for the Soul. But he'll be done chipping soon. I can see it out there. And they'll be back to cutting hunks of the massive tree. So we'll just hear occasional thuds instead of the chipper here soon. So, sorry, guys.
So, right. So is the Morton news no news?
It seems like it. I mean, the bars were a little bit of a letdown. I mean, they're delicious. But, again, I was expecting something like we didn't know we needed, you know. And I just haven't found that
yet.
Yeah,
like the first product is like, wow. This is amazing.
Yes.
And now they're in that, like, we got to keep doing amazing things. And I will tell you, a granola bar didn't blow my mind. A packet with another quarter of a Morton gel. Whoa, didn't see that coming. You know, because who'd want to carry three packets when you could carry two?
Well, and they're big. I compared it to the Never Second That You Like. They're bigger than that.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's big. So okay, it's going to be hard to carry.
Yeah. So question about the Never Second. Did you get me two flavors or did I just get one flavor? Because I've been looking around the house for this berry flavor and I don't know that I got it.
I thought they sent you one of each. They sent us Maybe. The frozen Never Second and then they sent us your house just, when I was there.
Okay, here's a testament. They sent us the first ones. I like it enough that, and I actually used it in my workout today. I wanted, Megan was ordering gels for the marathon. And she's like, you want caffeine gels? And I didn't need them. But I was like, does Never Second have
them? Yeah. And did you get so the cola?
Got the cola.
Ooh. So we'll let you know how yes. that flavor is.
And now there was also another option. There was something called espresso make.
Yeah, it was cola and espresso were the two caffeinated flavors.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? I think I want to go cola.
Yeah, I would too. That sounds better. I'm excited to hear how this tastes, though. Right. Yeah, I'll have to have you try it on air next time.
So far, I've enjoyed the flavor and consistency of their product. Like, I think that's my favorite thing. Like, so today I was doing, you know, I wasn't doing the 22 miles that the lady sitting next to me was. But I was doing like an 8 mile workout with some mile repeats in it. And halfway through, I was like, I know that's not like a distance you normally would take nutrition in, but I was like, I want all the help I can get today.
I agree. I like what you said too about taking a gel because you thought it would help. Like, we need to normalize that you can take gels when you're not working out and not doing a long run. Like you said, if it's like on the cusp of that and it's going to help you, why not take one, you know? I mean, and so back to the Morton 160, I had some people ask, like, well, when should I use it? Like, does it make any sense to use it? So with 40 grams of carbs, like, if you're somebody who's trying to get to, like, 80 grams of carbs an hour, I guess you could switch it out and do 40-40. But I would like to see, like, a research study on would it be better to just do the 25 and spread it out? Or, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want to see people using the 40 and then not fueling for as long. Do you know what I mean? Like, still aiming for 50 grams of carbs an hour, but using those instead. So having a bigger gap between when they take their gels. Like, I don't love that concept.
Do you think maybe it makes more practical sense to have the smaller packet and the flexibility of doubling up or having more?
That's kind of my thought.
Than having the big packet
and
having to, like, okay, I got to get this whole thing down or waste some if I'm not needing it.
Unless it's like somebody who's, like we said, aiming for that 80 grams of carbs an hour and just uses two of those instead. That's like the only place that I would see, I don't know, a benefit
it. Yeah. How many, what's the energy that it gives you per packet?
There's 40 grams of carbs or 160 calories, hence the 160. Yeah. They're naming, their nomenclature.
So you're saying if I was someone who could take one of those every half hour, I would hit a number that you would say would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I don't think everybody needs necessarily. I don't need that much, you know, but like some of the more elite runners like Kipchoge, right? He could take one of those every 20 minutes and like crush 120 grams of carbs an hour in his races. And that might make sense for him, but
And he's only going to be out there for that hour. So.
Right. 1 hour, 2 hours. I think it's a niche. I think it's a niche product. Like, I don't think that everybody needs to be like, ooh, I should try this. Like, if the 100 ones are working and you're getting enough grams of carbs per hour, I don't know that we need to change.
But here's the problem. We're Americans. You hand me a 12-ounce beer.
Bigger is better.
Or a 16-ounce beer. Like, when the waitress comes up and she's like, hey, would you like a 12-ounce beer or a 16-ounce? 16-ounce is only, you know, 50 cents more. You're like, yeah, give me the bigger.
Yeah.
So I could see us people being like, you know what? I'm going to cram more Morton into my mouth.
And I mean, I'm not mad about that, honestly. Like, you know, I want people to fuel more. So, like, I think I'm okay with you fueling more, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I just, I don't know. Like, I was underwhelmed, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a big marketing thing. They kind of hyped up that there was this new product, and it really isn't a new product. It's just a new size of their current product. The one thing I was thinking of was maybe this made sense for, like, triathlon. Like, if you're on a bike, maybe to have a bigger packet when you can not to open as much. I don't know. That was where my mind went, but
you know what? That's not a bad thought. Like if you were doing a triathlon, it would probably be something great to have to carry less packets and on your bike. Nice thing though is Ironman hands you Mortons during the run, so you would only need them for the bike.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, I tried to get 80 grams of carbs an hour on the bike, so that would be two of those. I mean, I personally, we also need to be drinking a lot, so like it makes sense to also have some sodium and fluid, but yeah, I think that makes sense.
See, and but before we say sodium fluid, you have spoken to us. The gel might get broken.
Okay, we have questions related to this, so let's go ahead and dive into this.
Because this is a good combo, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to answer some listener questions all about sort of Martin and what we're talking about, sodium. So this one is from Carla, and she said,
"Hi, what's up, Carla?
Question about the Morton gels. My understanding is that the hydrogel formation depends on the acidity of the stomach. If someone is on an acid-reducing medication, H2 blocker, or even just take some Tums, would that affect the ability of the hydrogel to form? My guess would be no, as there's probably still plenty of acidity in the stomach despite those meds, but curious to hear your thoughts about it. You guys rock."
Thanks, Carla.
Thank
you rock
you.
Too.
Thank you very much.
I love what you think of first. Yeah. So this was a good question. I honestly my mind hadn't gone there yet, right? And she kind of answered her own question because you're right, like a PPI that like decreases acid or Tums or something like that, it doesn't eliminate the acid. It just decreases the amount of acid. And usually you're taking it because you have too much acid. So maybe it's just like equalizing it back to where it should be. So of course I had to look up and see like, is there a way to find out how much acid these, you know, sodium alginate needs to create like the actual hydrogel, which is what is in, the Mortons, and of course I couldn't find anything concrete about it, but I do think it seems as though it doesn't need a ton of acid. Like I cannot imagine that an acid blocking medication would keep your body from forming that hydrogel because the stomach is a very acidic place. So I don't think there's anything to worry about, you know, from that perspective. But as I was looking all of this up, I found a very interesting fun fact that, so there's sodium alginate that is in those gels. That's what makes it start to be kind of thick in the container. And then that's what turns into even more of a gel in your stomach and encases that carbohydrate. And that's like the patented technology here that is why most of us tolerate Morton so well, is because our body can't recognize that there's sugar in there in our stomachs because it's encapsulated by this hydrogel. And what that means is that we can put more carb into our stomach without having negative GI issues from it. So that's kind of the technology behind this. So as I'm looking at it, that same sodium alginate compound is actually used to treat gastric reflux because it does form, like it was kind of like describing it as it forms that gel like on the top of the layer of the stomach contents, like the food that's in there, and blocks acid from like gurgling back up, which is gastric reflux. Right. So I was actually kind of shocked that that's like a treatment for reflux is the technology that's in these gels, which then got my mind thinking because I hear from a lot of athletes that they have reflux when they run. We've had people that are taking Tums, things like that. And I'm like, I wonder, I don't know how much sodium alginate is in this, like if it's even enough to help with reflux. But part of me was like, if somebody has reflux, like maybe Morton would be like a really good choice for them. So I learned something new.
How come your stomach can't tell there's sugar in there, but my mouth can?
Because it's not encapsulated until it hits the acid in your stomach. I still want to see like a non-funded research study that really looks at exactly what happens with a Morton in our stomach. Like, does that even actually happen? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what if we're all just being punked and it's just that we're paying $4 for a gel that still is the same?
It works, so I'm not gonna question it.
So same. I will tell you another thing. We just got off the phone. We just got off a video call with Adidas, and they have a new shoe coming out. It's $500.
I don't think you can even say that.
Why?
Can you say that?
It's off embargo tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh.
So by the time this comes out, it's like old news.
$500.
Yeah, racing shoe for $500.
You gonna get them?
Super light though. For a size 9, it's like 5 ounces.
And you know people are going to pay for it, just like we pay for our $4 Mortons, you know?
Now they're like
$6. You're going to get it. Yeah. All right, so Carla does not need to worry about taking Tums or PPIs or H2 blockers. It's not going to be a problem.
Nope, not for
If you think about it logically, if you took a Tums and then you couldn't digest food, that would be a problem. A lot of people are digesting food with a Tums in their stomach, so their stomach's still acidic enough to be breaking stuff down, including the Tums.
See, I didn't even need to look up research. I could just have Thomas answer it, because you're right. That is a very logical statement. Very logical.
Yeah, you got to go. Yeah. Hey, your stomach's still working. That's amazing.
Cool. Must still have some acid.
All right. Our next question is from Steven. He said, hi, team. Been a devout listener since my first marathon training block in 2021. Y'all have helped me to embrace carbs and electrolytes. Thank you. Question for y'all is using Morton and salt caps during a race. I've tried using Morton and Scratch, but that wasn't enough for me. I bonked, cramped, and had to walk after one of my best training blocks last winter. I plan to test alternating Morton and salt caps on my 20-miler before trying it in Chicago. Any hesitation or issues with the additional salt electrolytes in the salt caps mixing with Morton? Fine-tuned chemistry. Thanks. Peas and carrots. Bye.
All right. Thanks for the peas and carrots, Steve.
Hey, Steven, that sign-off was incredible.
Yeah. So we kind of just brought it up again. This is the one that you were talking about for us to continue the conversation.
Yeah.
But it is also, we kind of covered it talking about Ben Johnson. So I kind of have an idea where it's going to go. But Feathers, break down the science.
Yeah. So this is like the age-old question. Everybody wants to know why there isn't sodium in Morton. Can we take more sodium with Morton? Does it break the hydrogel? Because if you look, again, if you look up at studies, they can create like pellets, capsules, they called them worms, which basically it wasn't a real worm, right, of sodium alginate. And when they dropped it into a concentrated solution of sodium chloride, aka salt water, it dissolved, right? So we do know that in the presence of too much sodium, that that sodium alginate will break down. But the question is how much sodium, in addition to the acid in our stomach, in addition to the sodium alginate and the carbs, like actually breaks that down. And that's the answer. We actually don't know the answer to that question yet, right? We know that people have taken salt tabs with each Morton gel. So that would be 215 milligrams of sodium with their gel and not had GI issues. We know that Ben Johnson puts 1,000 milligrams of sodium from an unflavored LMNT into his Morton 320 and he doesn't have GI issues. So we know that people are successful in adding sodium when they need more sodium than Morton can give them. But I don't know exactly what's happening with that hydrogel in there. So I always say it's like a trial and error, right? I haven't heard of anybody having negative effects from adding sodium to it, but does it compromise the actual hydrogel? Maybe, maybe not, right? Like a salt solution that you're dropping that immediately into is very different than dropping it into our stomach. You know, there's a lot more going on in there. There's other things happening. So I think the possibility is there, but I just don't think we know. Again, we need more research. Anybody wants to do that, you know, what, how much sodium is actually going to break that down in the presence of our stomach acid. So
Steven's doing the exact right thing because he said he's going to test the salt caps with the Mortons on his 20-miler before Chicago, which is basically exactly what he needs to do to see if it works out okay.
Right, right. And for most people, the negative impact of not having enough sodium in a race is going to kick our butts way faster than a hydrogel breaking down, right? We've never had anybody be like, I got GI issues, that hydrogel broke down. You know, like we've never had somebody, you know, be able to attribute it to that. So I think it's worth playing around with to see, you know, if he can get this figured out. I still want better answers on all this, though. Like, I'm very perplexed by not knowing more.
We need to find someone at Morton who will just give us the raw answers to all this stuff. Like, what is happening? Give us the real stuff.
Yeah. Well, they'll tell you that we don't need sodium. That's why it's not in their products. So.
Oh, right, right, right.
I'm not sure if we'll ever
get. Maybe, maybe not them.
Really?
Maybe we find a third party.
I love it.
All right. Our next question is from Jen. She says, hi, there's been some hype about this new bicarb system from Morton to counteract the negative impact of lactate. Does this work and how would you use it? I can understand using it for an intense speed session, but what about race day itself? Jen, I love this one because I feel like there's like a 50-50 chance that you might have a terrible, terrible day if you take it.
Exactly. Exactly. And we talked about this once on the podcast before, but it came out in February, and I'm getting a ton of questions about it again. So I don't know if they're, if it's the, it's fall race season, or if it's they're marketing it harder again or what, but this was a brand new question. I keep getting a bunch more. So we know from research, like years back, 30 years back plus, that sodium bicarb, which is baking soda, can help neutralize the acid that's produced by our muscles when we work at a high intensity. So if we can neutralize that acidity, we can work at a high intensity longer. So it does have some performance benefits to it. But as Thomas explained on the last one, it's like, you know, it's like the science experiment where you put baking soda and you pour vinegar in, right? And it explodes. That's like putting baking soda into your stomach and then it explodes. And people were having explosive diarrhea from using this. So it kind of petered out, right? Because nobody was willing to, you know, take
explosive.
That risk.
Shocking.
Explosive. Yeah, right? So obviously that hydrogel technology that we just talked about could encapsulate that baking soda so it doesn't have that issue. Sorry, bicarb, right, is the system. So it encapsulates that so that that doesn't happen when it hits our stomach acid and it can pass into our intestines so that it can work. So, I mean, that was kind of genius, right, of them to bring this back with their technology.
Their marketing is claiming you can get a 1% to 2%
yeah.
increase in performance.
So that's my point to Jen.
To 2%.
To slurp this like soupy liquid that has like circular chunks of bicarb in it. I mean, it's like a disgusting.
And how much is it per serving? It's like a ridiculous per serving.
Wasn't it like 15 bucks or something? Like
yeah, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, 1%, there's other ways. And we should probably do an episode just on things that are percentage performance enhancers.
I like that.
Like, you know, because we talk about weight on here. We talk about, you know, race weight. You talk about shoes. You talk about gear. You talk about, you know, whether or not eating graham crackers before every run. You know, we could kind of break it down to different where you could get those percents and how much you're paying for them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Megan would tell you if you can get an Alpha Fly 1, it's worth every penny for every percent.
Okay, now that I derailed this conversation entirely, back to the bicarb system. So there's a potential 1% increase in performance, and the downside is that you might have explosive diarrhea.
I mean, you know I'm not a risk
which
taker.
Is,
I don't gamble.
Which is like 200% against performance.
Yeah, that's not going to do it.
Nope, not at all. I mean, honestly, like, I work with some people who run some pretty fast races and, you know, are very, very competitive. So when they are like, should I try this? And I'm like, if you want to, you know, to me that makes sense. But for like us peons, like really 1%, you know, I just don't know that it's worth the cost or the potential downside, as Thomas said. And yeah, I mean, we know carb loading can improve performance 3 to 7%. And super shoes, right? It's like 4%, right? You guys would know that better than me. But I mean, we have a lot of other options that maybe would be better for us, most of us first.
Yeah. I mean, I love the shoes because not only do they say they'll give you 4%, but when you look down at them, you're like, that's at least 10%. Like when you line up at the race start and you're like, I got fast shoes on, it helps.
All right. So bicarb, use that stuff at your own risk, people, or just skip it maybe. Okay, our next question is from Patrick. I really like how he addressed us. He said, sup, playas?
That's the only reason I picked it. Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I had to pick this. You're going to have to read it again. I had to pick this because he said, sup, playas. I'm like, yep, we're talking about that one.
I do realize you just encouraged everybody to.
I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Okay, so Patrick says, sup playas, I come from a weight training background and now follow more of the hybrid approach where I'm also running 40 plus miles a week along with my weight training. I still go off the old 1 gram of protein per body weight a day, as they say to do in the strength training world. Would you say that is still highly beneficial when training for a marathon or any other endurance event, or is it just a waste? P.S. For your next tour, come by the old Dirty H Houston. It's a lot hotter, better people, and much better food than Austin. And the running scene is very underrated. It's bigger than most think.
Damn, he just destroyed Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, you had a phenomenal intro, a questionable outro. You are very much on our top of the list.
I mean, I enjoyed the Houston when we went there. You guys ran the marathon. Wait. You ran the half with you, right? Mm-hmm. We both did the half, and Megan did the full.
Yep.
And I thought it was a cool town.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had fun. Yeah. It was kind of a ghost town on the weekend. Like, I guess some cities just shut down.
I have
on
a feeling we don't know where to go.
I think it was not a problem. Because
that thing was sprawling.
What do you mean we know where to go? We went to the best Mexican place and had like a buffet of whatever we wanted after the race. That was phenomenal.
That was good. But I'm saying, in general, in Houston, I feel like it's such a sprawling city. That, like, there's probably plenty of different Houstons to visit.
Good point. Anyways, back to his protein question after we talk all things carbs. So, you know, back in the day, we used to think strength athletes needed so much protein and endurance athletes did not, mainly because of what we were doing, right? You're, like, building muscle mass, right, as a strength athlete. And as a runner, you're lean and running fast and not lifting a ton of weights, but, you know, back in the day. So we used to have very different protein recommendations for strength athletes and endurance training, but now it's pretty close. So like when we look at the newer research, we usually estimate that runners need about 1.7 grams per kilogram of protein and strength athletes need like 1.5 to 2. So we're like right in the middle of the recommendations compared to a strength athlete. So honestly, you know, Playa Patrick over here probably can keep with his protein needs as is. The only thing that I question is he was talking about eating a gram of protein per pound of body weight, I think. Oh, he doesn't say pound. I don't know. I'm wondering.
Oh, yeah, he said 1 gram of protein per body weight a day.
So he's probably talking pounds because we're in America. But
yeah. It's got to be. Otherwise, you have one body and it would be 1 gram of protein, which seems light. I think it would be hard to get only 1 gram of protein.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be, like, impossible because even bread has protein in it. Like, a bagel has, like, 7 or 8 grams of protein. Yeah. So he's probably getting more protein than he needs if that's what he's doing overall, which might not be a problem, right? We've talked a lot on here about, like, timing of protein and making sure that it's not just the daily value but that we're getting enough at each meal. We're spreading it out very evenly since we can't store protein in our body. But sometimes I see people making the transition that Patrick is making where it sounds like he's still weightlifting, but he's obviously running a lot too. And if we're still eating that much protein, sometimes it displaces the carbs we need to be able to run, what do you say, 40 miles a week, 40 plus miles a week. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot of miles for a bigger body. Like he's torching carbs, right? So that would be the biggest thing there is I would make sure that it's not displacing the other things that he needs. And 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight might be too much for anybody, you know, no matter for strength or endurance. But I guess like the message here is our protein needs as endurance athletes are almost as high as strength athletes. So if we're doing both, like more isn't always better. We probably just need to make sure the timing is good at meals.
Do you think it's harder to convince someone like Patrick who comes from the weight training world to take in more carbs than the average human?
Probably. I mean, maybe I'm being stereotypical, but yeah, depending on what type of strength training background, there's some cultish, I won't mention the name, strength training groups that like very much demonize carbs and are very paleo and, you know, things like that. So like that mentality moving over into running, I have had people reach out to me like, okay, I know my old mentality is not supportive here, but like I'm having a really hard time moving forward with this, you know? So I think it can be just kind of depending on where he's at now. It could be a tough transition. Yeah.
Who was the trainer that you're talking about?
Trainer? Not one in particular.
No, come on. We're talking about CrossFit. Let's be real.
True.
Okay, and I can say that because my brother is super into, and my sister-in-law, they're super into CrossFit, and for a while I felt like they were very anti-carb until I convinced them otherwise through you. So
yeah,
are they still super into CrossFit?
Kind of. I think once you're in CrossFit, you never leave. Like there's a part of you that forever has that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in your soul. It's like you were branded.
Okay, let's move on to our next question. This next question is from Shannon. She said, "Hi, Megan, and Thomas. I have a question that is somewhat nutrition related. What is your advice on donating blood? Is there a good time between training blocks or even during a training block that you would say it's okay to donate blood? I took some time off from extensive training, but then ran the Dopey Challenge in January of 2023. I had been donating blood frequently and tried donating blood early in training, only to discover I was iron deficient. Sort of a good thing since running was sucking, and that was why. Now I wonder if and when to donate if I'm going to run long races more frequently. I'm signed up for the Dopey in 2024 and really want to get back to Boston, was there in 2018, or make it to the New York Marathon someday. Thanks for all that you do. Your fueling and specifically your sodium advice saved my running. I was getting migraines and vomiting after every long run until I researched and found your podcast. Thanks, Shannon."
You know who's like that? That's Robbie.
I know.
He's
convinced that it's not dehydration, but it 1,000% is.
Also, additionally, we just donated lots of blood.
Oh my God.
I can't tell you, we went to the inside tracker.
So much blood.
I don't know this. I think the technician.
What do you call the person? Is it a technician?
I'll just call it a technician. Yeah. A phlebotomist.
She was mistaken as to how many vials that we needed to give. Because I do this every 3 months. We go there. We know that they take 4 to 5 of the vials.
Yeah, I think she took 15.
I think she did. I think there was 12 I counted.
And I was like, oh my God. Was getting woozy because she was doing stuff with her other hand. So when she was holding like the tube that was sucking blood out, she was like going into a drawer with the other hand. She's like shaking my arm, which I could feel the needle. And then I was like, losing my mind. All to find out that my iron levels are fine.
Yeah.
Champions, both of you. I dig it. So I wanted to answer this question. It's been in our questions for a little bit now. But again, there's been so many people asking me and DMing me about should they donate blood? And I'm like, well, clearly people have questions about this. So I think we should probably talk about it. And I mean, I think we need to be cautious here. And I pause when I say that because I know how important it is to donate blood if we are able to donate blood. But there is absolutely a performance consequence of donating blood. So we need to be really smart about this, really, really smart about this. So if we take a step back and look at what it is, so they're taking 500 mls of blood from us, which is a decent amount. We have, that's about a pint. We have 10 pints of blood. So we still have a lot left, but I mean, a tenth.
That's a lot, but that's a lot.
Meg, that's like, you know, those milk cartons?
Yeah.
That's
a lot.
The whole thing of one of those.
Right.
Wait, how much is in those little vials we gave to Inside Tracker?
I figured this out because I was freaked out the first time I did Inside Tracker because I think she took like 10. It was more the first time than when I got it the subsequent time. So I feel like maybe some technicians just don't know how to do it. But I researched it because I was like, oh my gosh, I think there's only 2 mls of blood per tube, up to 4. So if you do the math, it's not too much. It just looks like a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm trying to compare it to a pint. That's 500.
Well, so that would only be 20 to 40 mls of blood versus 500.
Yeah, so donating is a lot more.
Yes, it's a ton. Yeah. Okay. So, of course, then I'm looking like how long does it take to regenerate this blood? Like how long would there be performance consequences to help her figure out? Like if I do want to donate, like when would I need to do it in order for it not to impact performance, both training-wise and on race day? So it looks like it takes about 2 weeks to regenerate the blood volume that you lost, but it takes 4 to 6 weeks to regenerate those red blood cells, which is where when we would see performance return to normal, right? So I think it could take 6 weeks post-donation for somebody that eats adequate iron in their diet. So if someone is prone to having low ferritin or has worked really hard to get their ferritin up and is on an iron supplement, I think if they donate, it would probably take even longer for that person to regenerate that during training, right? So I think we need to be smart and either do it in the off season or, you know, even if it's very early on in training. I mean, that's half your training block that you don't have enough red blood cells to, you know, give your muscles the oxygen that they need. So I think it would just be, if you truly don't want it to impact performance, it would have to be like very much in the off season to donate.
That makes sense.
Have you guys ever donated blood?
No. Yeah.
No.
Did I? I feel like in college I did for some weird reason.
Money?
I don't think it was for
money. They don't pay you for your blood. I think it's like, I don't know, plasma platelets or something they pay you for. I did it a couple times, and the one time that I did it was was when I was training for my second marathon, I felt terrible. I mean, you guys know I have trouble keeping my ferritin up. So I'm like, well, no wonder. I felt awful for like 2 months after I did it trying to run. So I was like, okay, when running's the goal, this probably isn't healthy for me because I just don't have enough iron stores to rebound from that fast enough. I think some men probably could rebound in a couple weeks and be fine, right? Because men are less prone to having low iron stores. So I think there are some people that probably could bounce back and do this okay.
How does our body make more blood?
I don't know. Don't ask me these hard questions.
I thought I was dumb for not knowing the answer to that. I was like, maybe I shouldn't ask this one.
I mean, it has to rebuild and resynthesize all the parts and pieces of blood, right? The red blood cells, all that kind of stuff.
Like, I didn't know if there's like a little factory someplace in you, maybe your kidneys, I don't know.
When people are doping, don't they give themselves erythropoietin, which increases the stimulus of creating red blood cells? So there's hormones in our body that cascade into creating these types of things. But I knew it at one point in my life, but it was one of the things that exited when other things needed to enter.
I will tell you, though, the advantage of getting Inside Tracker, if it comes back positive, or, you know, with the results that you can look to as encouragement for your current training situation. So it is nice to have that in your back pocket to be like, okay, things are good. You can rev it up.
Or vice versa. If, like, your running is sucking, it's a good way to check in and figure out if your ferritin is low or if something is off, and then you can fix it.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah. Like, you don't need to suck wind at the end of Falmouth. You can go find out that your ferritin's in the toilet again and start supplementing. Guilty.
All right, Thomas, our last question is for you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can nail this one.
Okay. They said, I started listening to the podcast over the last 6 months or so, and now I'm going through the back catalog, which is incredible, but I'm also curious to understand where the peas and carrots sign-off came from. Keep up the amazing work. It's changing so much for me with my training and after reaching out to Feathers.
Well, this is a great question. As I spent many years studying poetry and philosophy and haikus and all sorts of theology, you know, I really boiled everything down to two things. And those two things are peas and carrots. And I end the show once again wishing you the best.
No, that's not how we're ending it. Also, tell the people the truth.
I have no idea.
No, how yes, you do.
I do.
Remember, we cartoon, Googled right? that, the little cartoon like thing that was like old school.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a song and you knew it. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And you were singing along.
Oh,
and was, like,
yeah.
School rocks?
Oh, no. Rice and beans.
Rice and beans.
Yeah, rice and beans. So where did energy machine.
And then it ends with peas. Where did peas and carrots come from?
I don't know.
See, that's mine. Someplace up here. Saying.
But what she's talking about is like one of those schoolhouse rocks, in between cartoons. They had these things. There's probably one called Eat Your Vegetables or something like that. Mm. There's several of those healthy things. They even talked about the food pyramid back in the day.
All right, that does it for this
week. Wait, can I apologize that we don't know the answer?
Sure.
All right. I'm really sorry. I cannot give you a definitive answer on where the peas and carrots sign-off came from, but now it does indicate the end of the show for both Feathers and Megan. So when I say...
So thanks, everyone.
Peas and carrots.
So thanks, everyone, for tuning in this week. And if you have a question that we have not answered, you can email us at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com and we will answer it here on the show. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Peas and carrots. Did you want a t-shirt?
Bye.
9 years to me. Yeah.
What did you want to say?
Okay, you got to edit this out.
Well, duh.
Like, did you work out yet? Or are you just getting there? Did you like pour some water in your head? There's two
box jumping motherfuckers. And then you got these.
After like 17 vodka sodas too. It's pretty good.
Even better. Yeah, you don't mess with that.
Yeah. That's where the strength comes from. did a box jump.
PR, and I was like, I just need more explosive power in my legs. And I did a box jump, and my back went out.
See?
And I was like, oh. Waddles.
Waddles.
Okay. Who is this, Sharon?
Shannon. She said, hi.
Okay. You can't start there. You
relax.
Start
over. Okay. It's creepy looking.
It is not.
There's like a bean that's alive.
In my backyard. Jeez. Oh,